This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teck. My guest today is Charlene Murray. She is a case manager at Women's Aid Organization, better known by its acronym WAO. We're going to be talking about a report that WAO recently released. It's called Human Trafficking in Malaysia, a focus on women and children. Charlene Murray, thank you for being here. What is the purpose of this report?
Okay, so the purpose of this report is to give readers a better understanding of the trafficking situation in Malaysian context, and also to raise awareness on what is happening in our own backyard. So WAO is a service provider for women and children, specifically in domestic abuse. And what we do look at when we get cases is what are the different dimensions that women come to us for. And trafficking is did take up a significant number of cases throughout our reporting period. And so what this report truly aims actually is to talk about the trafficking of women and children more in that context as compared to trafficking on the whole.
Why do you think the understanding among public is lacking or insufficient in this issue?
I think the term trafficking is very broad. And to actually understand trafficking from a definitive point of view is easy because it's something that you can read up on. But to truly understand trafficking and the different ways it manifests in our society is something that you would need to read case reports as such to pick up on these points.
Mm-hmm. So how do we understand this problem?
So in essentially, human trafficking is modern-day slavery. So to explain more about it would be a slavery where an individual in question is thrown into a situation which is different from what he or she expected, with no consent or the autonomy to make any choice or decisions at their end. So, and most of the time, these predicaments are coupled with force, fraud, exploitation and coercion to obtain some kind of labor or commercial sex act.
Reading through the report, I too fall into that category of having this preconceived or misunderstanding of what trafficking is, because I thought it is human smuggling too, mm-hmm. when you transport people from one country to country mm-hmm. B, but that's different. Yeah. It's not the same thing.
So there are many different ways that trafficking can manifest, as I mentioned. But what this report also looks at is the fact that human smuggling, although different from trafficking, can be a predisposition for people to be vulnerable towards trafficking. So a good example would be in the situation where someone could enter here legally, with a work permit or with promised jobs. But upon arrival, they might not be able to work the job that they had been promised. And in fact, they might be pushed into an industry which they don't want to be in. But because of the lack of autonomy, which I spoke about earlier, they are unable to make those choices. And more often, they are stuck in that situation where they are controlled by traffickers or even agents. Mm-hmm. So trafficking in general can happen in many different forms. And what is important to understand that the moment there is the element of force and coercion, and the moment that someone loses their autonomy to decide for themselves what they need to do, and that includes not doing the job that they are forced to do, then it constitutes as trafficking.
Mm. Isn't trafficking then a misnomer? Because most people would think there are some movement involved. Wouldn't modern-day slavery be a better way to capture what the problem is?
I would say that it is both. So you do have the conventional trafficking incidents that happen in Malaysia, and these are primarily for example, refugee and asylum-producing nations or nations where the count of statelessness is high. So you do have movement of people who are trafficked into the country, especially women and children, through that conventional method. But what is also important for us to note is that trafficking doesn't just happen through that cross-border approach. It can also mean that you are here for a job and which you are then pushed into a different industry.
So this report focuses on women and children.
Yes.
Why so?
Okay, so as I mentioned earlier on, WAO provides services for women and children. And one thing that we acknowledge is that abuse in general is very gendered based. So when we talk about the root cause of trafficking, we identify the fact that women become even more vulnerable in situations where they come from areas where they are poverty-stricken and such. And women are more susceptible to gender forms of abuse. And if you look at the statistics as well as previous case studies, the majority of the women who are trafficked into Malaysia are either trafficked for sex work or domestic servitude. And sometimes they are often criminalized and hence they have the lack of access to justice. So this is what WAO aims to address and to highlight based on this report.
Is this on the rise in Malaysia?
I would say that it is on the rise. Yes, it is.
And is this in line with our global trend as well? Are more people getting trafficked than ever before?
Trafficking in general, globally, is on a rise. But in a Malaysian context especially, I believe that there are certain parts of our law which creates a space where women are also susceptible to this form of trafficking. For example, in our Employment Act, there is a specific area of how domestic workers fall under domestic servitude, and therefore they are not eligible to the many benefits of foreign employment, which other foreign employment might benefit from. And this puts them in a precarious situation where they are not able to access legal justice, they are not able to access maternity leaves, off days, and often these are the conditions which is an area where it promotes trafficking in general. Yep.
Why is that the case and why hasn't it been amended yet?
I believe that that there are some calls for amendments, but it just hasn't been done yet.
This is from the report as well. There is an estimated 250,000 documented migrant domestic workers here and a further 100,000 undocumented without papers. For domestic workers who are being exploited, what can they do?
I think it really starts with ethical employment. Malaysians, us in general. The few things that we need to look out for and to make it something that we practice is ensuring that we don't withhold their documentation, that we're fair and just to them, that, you know, they are humans too and they're here to work and therefore they should be given respect and the sort of treatment which you would accord to another person. Ensuring that there are off days, ensuring that they are able to move freely. I understand that it is illegal in Malaysia to hold a domestic worker's passport, but at the same time, many of us do that. Many Malaysians do that. And because it is such a norm and there's really no recourse for an employer who does that, you will, of course, then create an environment where someone else might do that, but with the intention to further exploit the person. And it could be in a situation where the exploitation is in a form of trafficking the person or forcing the person to do a job that they are not willing to do.
How do we know then whether someone is a victim of human trafficking?
So, there are a few telltale signs. Of course, to fully assess if someone is a victim of trafficking is not easy to do. But as the general public, what we could see is that whether someone, if we have noticed if a worker is not free to leave or come as he or she wishes, who is under 18 and providing commercial sex acts, a person who is unpaid or paid very little or even just paid through tips. Also, another big telltale sign would be someone who is made to work excessively long and unusual hours, and is recruited through false promises concerning the nature or conditions of his or her work. And in some cases, if we do see people who work in situations where there are high security measures which exist in the workplace or their living conditions, for example, opaque windows, boarded up windows, bars on windows, and not allowed to leave the premise, then there is a good hunch that this person could potentially be a survivor of trafficking.
And what should well-meaning people do if they suspect someone is being trafficked?
So we would encourage the well-meaning person to lodge a report. It is okay if you are not sure if this person is a survivor of trafficking, but if you do your bit to lodge a report, then the relevant authorities can conduct an investigation. And if the person is truly in that precarious situation of being a survivor of trafficking, then you might have saved a life.
This is a police report?
Yes, a police report. For minors, you can also, if you do see someone who looks way below the age of 18, and you do suspect that this person is, in Malaysia, labour law states that you have to be 18 and onwards to work. But if you do suspect that a person is made to be a child labourer or there's child labour that is involved, you can also alternatively inform JKM, Jabatan Kebajikan Masyarakat, or what we call social welfare.
But if they are not Malaysians, would the JKM be able to help them?
Yes, the law still accords to them. So the Anti-Trafficking in Persons and Anti-Smuggling Act is applicable to anyone who is in Malaysia. So it doesn't have to be a Malaysian national or a person who has valid documentations. Basically, anyone who is in Malaysia who is potentially smuggled or trafficked, the law applies to them, and therefore they are also accorded the security that comes along with the law.
Is it easy to prove that, though? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, do our laws not differentiate between someone who is brought in illegally and an undocumented person?
Yeah. So if you ask me, the definition of trafficking and human smuggling, as well as the different... The way it can manifest itself in different situations is very clear in our Anti-Trafficking in Persons and Anti-Smuggling Act. However, you are right to point out that sometimes it is not that easy for the authorities to pinpoint if this person is truly a survivor of trafficking or someone who has been smuggled in. I think it takes some kind of aptitude among enforcement agencies as well as the authority to be able to identify if this person is a survivor of trafficking. And having said that, what Malaysia really needs to improve on is the implementation of the law and also ensuring that different tiers of the authorities are well versed in identifying, classifying cases, as well as providing support and legal redress to survivors of trafficking. One area that I wanted to highlight is that just because someone is smuggled into the country, it doesn't mean that they eventually might not be a survivor of traffic as well. Because what was mentioned in the report as well, which is the current trend, is that people may come in with legal employment passes or people may be smuggled in. But upon being smuggled in, they may be then forced to work in areas which they do not wish to work in with no choice and no autonomy to make a decision against it. And that constitutes as smuggling. So this is something which enforcement need to look deeper into, prosecution need to look deeper into to be able to assess fully whether this person falls within the means of trafficking.
I'm speaking today to Charlene Murray, a case manager at Women's Aid Organisation. I'll ask her what we are doing to combat human trafficking in Malaysia after this break. BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. My guest today is Charlene Murray, a case manager at Women's Aid Organisation, better known by its acronym WAO. We're talking about a report that WAO recently released. It's called Human Trafficking in Malaysia, a focus on women and children. In the report, five stories of survivors are included as case studies. And they're all really, really harrowing. And we talk about how a lot of victims of trafficking go into the sex industry or are confined to domestic servitude. Mm-hmm. But are these the primary industry that absorbs victims of trafficking? What about workers in the construction field, for example, or security guards? They go through the same agent system and they have to pay debt. Are they vulnerable, those industries, to trafficking as well?
Yes, they are. So as our report suggests as well, that there's a large percentage of trafficked individuals who are women and children, especially migrant domestic workers industry, as well as other unassuming industries such as agricultural, the food service, textile and electronic industries. Again, it's important to be reminded that trafficking can constitute as individuals who are recruited with false promises and made to work in undesirable conditions.
Trafficking victims are vulnerable to being re-trafficked.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
So, many victims of trafficking opt not to go through the entire lengthy process of legal redress, hence making them vulnerable to traffickers who are at large and scot-free in the eyes of the law. Because if you don't go through the legal redress, then you can't penalise the traffickers who are in question. And therefore, a lot of them choose to be repatriated because of those long, lengthy processes. And just for the reasons to get over the ordeal that they had encountered and also to return to their family. The reality is that when they do return to their families empty-handed and to the same situation of poverty that is, and when they are still in need of employment that could potentially improve the quality of their family's lives, they would potentially seek employment out of their countries again, where they could be re-trafficked.
Have anyone, offenders, been brought to justice, made accountable?
So according to our report, out of the 66 trafficking survivors which we assisted between 2014 to 2015, 3 out of those cases had gone through the full process where perpetrators were served the sentence that they deserve. So the statistics does seem very low. But again, it's the long, lengthy process which they need to go through, which makes a lot of them drop out of
66 cases.
Out of 66 cases, 3 cases had gone through the court process and had sought legal redress. And out of those 3 cases, the perpetrators were convicted for the crimes that they had committed.
Over a period of how many years was this?
1 year.
1 year. Six cases in 1 year.
Yes, between 2014 and 2015, so close to 2 years.
Right. Because going through the court process requires resources as well, isn't it? And if you are a survivor of human trafficking, how does one go through that? Do they have support from our government?
Okay, so technically not, because the Atip Som 2007 is an act that protects survivors of trafficking and human smuggling. And the crime of human trafficking is a crime against the state. So you don't need to find your own lawyers. The lawyers in the form of public prosecutors will be provided to you, and they will be the ones who will assist you with the legal redress and all the court proceedings. So it is not the issue of finding legal representation, but it is more of the issue of getting out of the system and having your case classified as a trafficking case, which then later awards you an interim protection order, which is very important to most people because that will protect them from being re-victimized while the investigations are ongoing.
Say a survivor decides to proceed with a court case and become a witness. What can they do in the meantime? Are they supposed to seek employment? while they are in the country?
So while a case is under investigation, typically a survivor would be put into one of the protection homes. So our government has 7 protection homes, which caters to survivors of trafficking. And those homes range between homes for women, men, as well as minors, female minors and male minors. But what also has been recently done is that a few certain NGOs were given the authority to house them at their shelters in the course of investigation. So most of the time when a survivor's case is ongoing, especially an Atip case is ongoing, they will be placed in a protection home. In terms of working and income generation, from what I understand, within those homes, there are small activities to keep the women busy. There are counsellors that come about to talk to the women to deal with their PTSD, as well as there might be some small activities which they could engage in, which would help them earn or generate some kind of income.
Yeah. So what do you think are the gaps at the moment? Why does this issue persists? Why is human trafficking so resilient?
So, I believe that human trafficking is so resilient because it's really not just an individual effort of trafficking someone across the border or even it's not an individual effort of exploitation. So when we talk about human trafficking, it's always a bunch of criminal networks that sustain the trade, which is deeply embedded and also most often it involves other criminal activities that come along with trafficking as a component. So this is why coordinated response and better enforcement of laws is needed to tackle this situation. And again, if we look at how to deter traffickers and to provide survivors of trafficking, this is something which needs to be a collective effort internationally, regionally and also locally. We need to acknowledge that combating trafficking is not an action that a nation can accomplish on its own, and with treaties and conventions which are tailored for ASEAN countries, as well as tools and guidelines which are tailored specifically for ASEAN regions, we are equipped resource-wise. So implementation is the part where implementation of those guidelines and effort to end human trafficking, on the other hand, will need to be a collective effort.
Are there regional collaboration at the moment?
Well, the ASEAN countries have signed several treaties and conventions, which is stated in our report. And that is actually a good start to ensure that these treaties and conventions, the elements of the treaties and conventions are implemented into individual domestic laws, which effectively deters traffickers. But what I also want to say is that internally in Malaysia, we do have acts. We do have acts that in many different forms that sufficiently protect survivors of trafficking. And for example, the Atip Som 2007 Act has been amended in 2010 and again in 2015 to provide better protection to survivors of trafficking. Our Penal Code, the Child Act 2001, the Immigration Act, as well as our federal constitution have sections which refer to the protection of survivors of trafficking and the criminalization of any act of trafficking.
Are those laws and acts in accordance with how international standards define what human trafficking is?
Yes. So if we look at our Atip Som Act,
Atip Som is Anti-Trafficking
in Persons and Anti-Smuggling Act in Malaysia. So it defines trafficking in accordance with international standards. But it's worth to also mention that based on the report of the UN Special Rapporteur on Trafficking in Persons, which was written in 2015, there is a clear lack of understanding of the issue of trafficking by the authorities, which hence contributes to the lack of identification of cases in the first place.
Lack of identification. Because?
Because the act is there, but whether the information is deciphered across the board through various authorities, whether that is done in the similar way, that is the challenge. So there is a clear lack of understanding between authorities because it's not just the police who identifies trafficked individuals. It could be social welfare. It could be maritime. It could be the immigration through various raids or various efforts. So to ensure that everyone is on board and everyone understands what constitutes as a person who is trafficked, that is the challenge here.
Because we don't want the victims who survive this traumatic experience to be treated as a criminal as well.
Correct.
It? Okay.
Yeah. Often we find that when survivors of trafficking are arrested, they are arrested first and criminalized for their crimes first before thorough investigations are done to see whether this person is actually a survivor of trafficking. So that process needs to be changed. Yeah. Where the assessment of whether this person could be smuggled or could be trafficked should be done first before the criminalization of their acts.
And it discourages survivors from coming forward or reporting their abusive employers.
Correct,
too.
Because most of the time they don't have legal documentation, and if they have any, it's withheld and not with them. So it is a scary place. It's a scary situation for women and children, especially to come forward, especially when we're talking about those who come from foreign lands who might not even speak the same language, to come across and to explain themselves and the predicament that they are in and seek the help that they need.
Of those that do step forward and come forward, were they encouraged by a friend, or was there someone to hold their hands to the commission or to the police? Or is it always an act of desperation that they have nowhere else to turn to that they show up at a police station, for example?
Most of the time, it is an act of desperation, of being tired of being in that situation. But sometimes it's also to find that opportunity to leave the situation. So that's the drive that... So some of our... if you look at some of our survivors' stories in our report, many of them actually premeditate on how to leave that situation and where to go to and who to contact after. So they just want to make sure that they don't fall back into the same situation again. So it's not as easy as I know I'm trafficked, I'm going to leave now. It often has to be premeditated because most of the time they don't have the freedom of movement. So
They're alone, right? They have to.
Yes, oftentimes they are alone. But if you look at one of our stories where we were talking about, it was a story of a survivor who was sold into prostitution, where there were other 9 women who were with her in the same situation, where they had been promised to come here and to work in a restaurant industry, but later on found that they were actually sold to a brothel. So if you look at that story in particular, it actually highlights the elements where they had worked together, try to find family members or even friends or some kind of acquaintances outside of this predicament that they are in to find a way to get out of that situation. And even so, what happened in that particular story is that a friend of theirs actually alerted the police and the police raided the place, which then resulted in them being rescued. So there was no opportunity for them to just walk out of the premise as they wish.
Do you think there is a lack of public outrage on this issue? Because it involves children and women, and they're subjected to such cruel treatment. And I just wonder why we're not more angry about this and why politicians or enforcement agencies are not more proactive on this issue.
I think when we sometimes look at abuse in general, or for example, if you bring about the fact that we have missing kids in Malaysia, and there was a published statement which said that we had 8,000 missing children between 2012 to 2014. I think the lack of public outrage is because it's not easy for people to link that to the whole issue of trafficking. So to not link abuse to the issue of trafficking, the abuse of migrant workers, the abuse of women and children who have come to Malaysia to work. And so when you don't automatically classify these cases as trafficking, it just comes across as just another case. And so if you look at the one or two cases which are so heinous and have been posted all over social media and has been publicized, there was, of course, an outrage by the public. But like any kind of social media, another news would always take over the heat of that particular news. And then the outrage just dies down. So what we do need to make the public more aware of this and also to keep that outrage alive so that something can be done about it is to ensure that statistics come out in an official manner, whether in a statement, whether in a report, and something is made accessible for the public to read so that they are more aware of the situation of traffic survivors in Malaysia.
And this figure of 8,000 children missing between 2012 and 2014, is that from the government?
I believe so.
So what comes after this? How does WAO intend to build on this report to sustain that, so to speak, outreach?
So WAO will always provide services for women and children. And I guess what we can do and what we intend to do is to work closer with enforcement agencies as well as the authorities, and to work closer in terms of providing services to identify traffic survivors. So we do run a safe place. We do run a safe home. And we have on several accounts work with the authorities as well as embassies to provide temporary care and support as well as a place, a safe place to stay for survivors of violence. And especially in this regard, survivors of trafficking. And so that's what we intend to continue to do. And also in terms of advocacy, that is something that we hope to continue to push the agenda of making of being able to provide, for the state to provide better responses as well as identification of cases for survivors of trafficking.
Thank you very much for the work you do, and thank you for speaking to me today.
You're welcome.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.